We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
They're going to kill the love of my life.
Yes!
If I don't go back to what I was doing.
This Friday.
Our line of work is quite brutal and quite ruthless.
How far would you go for love?
You steal a truck, bring it to me. Then you make your money.
Is it dangerous?
Of course it's dangerous!
Nicholas Holt, Felicity Jones, with Ben Kingsley and Anthony Hopkins.
All this trouble, all this pain for love.
Collide in theaters Friday. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13.
When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy. Too busy. Too busy worrying about your budget. Too busy scheduling appointments. Too busy to build a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy. And that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix.com, it's easy for you to create your stunning website. Go to Wix.com and create your website today. It's easy and free. That's Wix.com.
Welcome to the RotoWire Basketball Podcast presented by DraftKings.com. DraftKings is the leader in daily fantasy sports. You can use that promo code ROTOHOOPS when you deposit on DraftKings. That'll get you a free contest entry today. All right, it is Thursday, December 31st, New Year's Eve. Nick Whalen here with James Anderson for a special New Year's Eve edition, I guess, of the RotoWire Basketball Podcast. James, I know you're keeping a close eye on college football today with all these bowl games ramping up. We got the two national semifinals. One starts this afternoon, I think 3 o'clock our time, and then another later tonight. So plenty of college football action. Not quite as much going on in the NBA. I guess the NBA kind of hogged Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, more of a college football holiday, but still six games tonight. Warriors Rockets will be fun. Bucks Pacers won't be very fun, but that still will be going on. We'll talk a little bit about last night's games, get into a few NBA prospects as we usually do, and then start talking about some of the teams that are kind of in flux. I know last week, a couple weeks ago, before Christmas, we talked about some of the teams in the Eastern Conference that were kind of on the bubble between being playoff contenders and falling back, and we'll do the same with the Western Conference. But, like we said, it's New Year's Eve, so what do you have going on tonight?
Going out to dinner with the girlfriend, and then going over to a house party
out in the burbs, and I was having to do my research on when the best time to order an Uber will be, and it sounds like I'll be staying up till about 4 in the morning waiting for those prices to come down, because it's going to be pricing, yeah, it's going to be about a
out in the burbs.
Yeah, it's out in McFarland, actually, is where my friend and his fiance have a house. So it's going to be, you know, we're talking like a $20 Uber ride without any surge pricing. Mm. So don't want that to creep up into the 70s.
Why don't you just drive yourself? You're not going to be drinking.
Oh, man, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that.
You have a car.
Yeah, I do have a car.
That flashy Hyundai out there.
I could just hop in the rig at the end of the at the end of the night and head home. But it's going to be a long night, I have a feeling. But yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it should be pretty fun. What about you?
Yeah, I'll be staying in the city, not hitting the burbs tonight. Got a couple friends coming down. It's a couple friends that are in grad school, so they're basically on winter break for another 2.5 weeks. So they're just kind of hanging out at home and are gonna come down for the night. But yeah, I mean, it's basically gonna be football based. I'm not gonna start doing anything real until after that Alabama Michigan State game wraps up.
I wish I could say the same thing, and it really kind of depends. Like My ideal, like, New Year's Eve is a house party, I think, rather than going to the bars, just because I think that's a good way to waste a ton of money. And you usually just end up doing what you do anyways when you go out to the bars on New Year's. I mean, it's not anything special or anything. You're just paying, you know, $10 for a glass of champagne to cheers at midnight. That's the only real difference. So I'd prefer to do it at a house. I'm interested to see what the kind of vibe's going to be like at this house in terms of, are we going to be viewed as, you know, bad company if we're just sitting there watching the game? Like, are there going to be people that want to, like, do other stuff? So I don't know how that's going to really go. I really actually care about the Clemson-Oklahoma game more than that later game. So, I mean, I'm happy that's the early game, so I'll be able to see that one at least. But
3 o'clock's an early start. And I understand most people, or a lot of people at least, probably aren't working today. But 3 o'clock, I mean, that just – the games were on New Year's Day last year, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That seemed to work a little bit better.
Like, what's wrong with that?
That was incredible.
I think
it's –
there is definitely a scheduling thing where – almost regardless of, you know, what the holiday is, I think all major sporting events try to do anything they can to not be on a Friday, because I think that's the hardest day to get eyeballs for any event. But I mean, I still think, you know, New Year's Day, it's not
an event like this.
It's not your typical Friday. You know, it's not like get home from work and like go out to dinner with the wife. Like, I mean, it's a Friday on New Year's Day. Everyone's just sitting around at home. So really don't know why they couldn't have just done that, but
it's also the college football playoff too. Like, people aren't if you want to watch this game, you're going to make sure you watch it no matter what time it's at. But yeah, I mean, it's odd that they're going up against Bucks Pacers. You think they would you'd think they would have wanted to avoid that in the Indianapolis market, but apparently not. But we'll start with some prospect talk. I think we broke down Brandon Ingram a little bit last time.
Love
we also
Brandon
talked
Ingram.
About Scalabissier and what was that on Ingram?
I love Brandon Ingram.
I've liked him more since we talked about him. Yeah, but Labissiere, we talked about before Christmas. He was kind of – he hasn't been good through Kentucky's non-con season. It kind of hit, I guess, for him, rock bottom against Louisville over the Christmas holiday. I think he played something like 12 minutes off the bench. Had 2 points, both on free throws, just looks overmatched this season. And there was a story that came out about a week ago, or I guess less than a week ago, where an anonymous scout, and scouts have to speak anonymously on these issues, so it's not really an issue necessarily where the scout's trying to, you know, hide behind the anonymous label. Scouts aren't allowed to comment personally, you know, NBA scouts on college prospects. That's a tampering issue. But basically, one scout had some pretty negative things to say about Labissiere,
right.
And I just wanted to get your take, I guess, on the reaction to that. John Calipari kind of ripped that scout, kind of basically he thought the comments were a little more malicious maybe than they needed.
Did he rip the scout or the person that published the quotes?
I guess kind of both.
I mean, because, yeah, I mean, I don't see what ripping the scout gets you. If I was him, I would have gone after the guy that published them. Although I don't really...
I don't see what's wrong with publishing those.
I don't see what's wrong with it. I mean, it's a great way to get page views and, like, become, like, kind of a talking point based on your article. But I probably wouldn't have just because, like, that's so... I mean, those quotes are kind of so outlandish that it's... It's really just kind of shock. Yeah.
Well, here's the quotes real quick. If you haven't heard him by now, the scout told SNY.TV's Adam Zagoria, said Labissiere was, quote, a paper tiger, a mock draft myth, a fraud, among other things. Big Scal, no strength, no toughness, no game. Comes off the bench, plays 10 minutes, had 2 points, 3 rebounds, 0-3 from the floor, shot an air ball and an easy hook. And that's referring to the Louisville game, which Kentucky did win. But, yeah, I think Calipari...
The only thing I really take a ton of issue with from just that quote is the part where he says he has no game. I agree about you could make a case that he's, you know, mock draft myth, like a paper tiger, no strength, no toughness. I can see those cases. I mean, to say he has no game kind of misunderstands what his game is. He's not. Like, you look at his body and you just – or you look at basically, you know, this is a highly hyped freshman big man, and you just sort of expect him to be kind of dominating down low and everything.
Well, especially
like
at
that.
Kentucky, too. I mean, right. The guys who have come through, it's almost an unrealistic standard to live up to. And, like, who's been, like, the worst of the Kentucky big men since Calipari took over? Like, Nerlens Noel? A guy
unless you want to throw
Josh Harrelson.
No,
Daniel Orton.
Yeah, I was gonna say Daniel,
Daniel Orton. Daniel Orton was a good college player.
Was he? I mean,
he was
like,
pretty good.
He played like
he ended up being a
very
pick,
minimal minute. Yeah,
was he lottery?
I don't
he went
think
to OKC.
So.
They probably weren't a lottery pick at that point.
I mean, he was a kind of. I mean, let's. I mean, he was a bust.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Nerlens Noel is a very controversial NBA player because,
and he only had a half a season too. I mean, didn't he tear his ACL like right before the start of SEC play?
Yeah, I mean, it's not all. I mean, these aren't all home runs. The Kentucky big men. I mean, you got Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins,
bust. Dakari Johnson
and Carl Anthony Towns. I mean, Towns, Davis, Cousins. I mean, that's pretty elite. I mean,
was Towns? I have a hard time remembering this. I listened to the CBS Sports College Basketball podcast, and Gary Parrish had a couple points that I'll bring it up in a second about this story. But he mentioned Carl Towns as not a comparison to Labissiere necessarily, but he's like, you know, Carl Towns had. He said a stretch of games, you know, in the beginning of the year where he was in single-figure scoring. It just kind of looked like, you know, he was a good player, but obviously the platoon situation was kind of holding him back. But it wasn't until mid to late in the season that he really, really became a lock top two, mm-hmm. top three prospect, right?
I mean, he was – I think he was kind of always the consensus number two guy.
Yeah,
it wasn't until late in the season that he became, like – like, everybody thought it was Jahlil Okafor, number one, like, lock it up. It wasn't until, you know, almost February or so where there started becoming, like, whispers that maybe Okafor wasn't a lock to go number one. But with Towns, you never had any doubts about how his, like, body would transition. Like, you knew at least he'd be, you know, a good defensive center. When he started showing a ton of offensive flashes down the stretch, that's when people started to think, you know, potential superstar building block. But I mean, Scal hasn't shown, like, Scal, the trouble with him is there's a legitimate possibility that he could just be a straight up bust. Like, he could be a guy that's out of the league in like 3 years after being drafted, where you definitely weren't thinking that about Towns. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely kind of a weird. Didn't that scout also say something about how, like, you know, he's not the number one pick, he's not the number,
you like, say he's like the 50th pick
or he's
something.
Not the, like, something about him not being the 50th pick, yeah. Like, I mean,
well, that's what I wanted to ask you too, is like, even though he's had this horrible start and even if he doesn't turn things around, like, let's say he ends up playing out the season, Kentucky is like, you know, a top 7 to 15 team, they kind of vacillate back and forth like that, they end up as a 2 or 3 seed, and they, you know, regardless of what happens, it's Kentucky.
I don't think it's a lock that he goes top 10, but I think if the draft was today, he'd still go top 10.
Do you think he'd still go top 5?
No.
Draft Express has my number 5 right now.
I don't think he'd go top 5. You know, he could still drop. Like, there was a year when Perry Jones was the projected number 1 overall pick a few years ago into, I believe, like into December. He was still projected to go number one, and he just cratered, like his stock cratered. He almost fell out of the first round. I think OKC got him at the very end of the first round that year.
That's a good comparison.
That's something that could legitimately happen with Scal, assuming that, like, if he just does, if this kind of just continues on like a straight line, like the rest of the season, where he's kind of a non-factor in most of their games, then he's definitely going to fall out of the lottery. But I still don't really see him falling out of the first round. It's not a super deep class. There's some guys that you can fall in love with towards the top of the draft for sure. But, you know, I mean.
Is Brandon Ingram one of those guys?
He's definitely one of those guys.
Well, it's like when you get down to, you know, let's say Scal falls out of the lottery, whatever it is. And at this point, it is hard to see him, like, drastically turning things around. You know, it's not like he's dealing with an injury, or maybe he is and we don't know about it. But it doesn't seem like he is, at least. Like, once you get down into, like, the 17, 18 range, it's like, would you go him, or would you look at a guy like, say, Draft Express has Gershon Ubesole from France? It's like, yeah, you might as well take a chance on Lavissier at that point, right?
I mean, I don't want to speak to Gershon's abilities.
Correct.
Have not seen him play. But, yeah, I mean, I think that there's a ton of guys. Like, well, for instance, like you have Nigel Hayes at 25, you have Caris LeVert at 19, you have Isaiah Briscoe at 22. I mean, these are all guys that I think, you know, if everything breaks right, they're like seventh men,
right? Which is a valuable piece and a piece that you want, but it's like
that's not the point of having a first round pick in most cases. Like, if you're a team like, you know, the Spurs or the Warriors or something, a surefire like rotational piece has more value to you than like a lottery ticket. But it just, there's a lot of teams where that's not
the
case.
If you're the Sixers at 24, like, you're loving if Scal falls to you there.
Right. I mean, there's tons of teams that would love to. I mean, most teams in the Eastern Conference, I feel, would prefer to take a flyer on a guy like Scal than take someone like Briscoe, who's going to be useful. But he's a guy that you should be able to acquire in other ways. I mean, you could sign a guy like that for a pretty affordable free agent contract. So, I don't know. I think that he's very, and I also think it's tough for Scal because I don't think that they're not like letting him, they're not running the offense in a way that the best sort of suits his game. They're kind of running what they want to run, that's going to help Murray and Briscoe and those guys. And it's Scal's job to kind of keep up or just kind of get left
behind.
They're
using him as a rim protector, and that's not what he is. Like, you know, Gary Parrish mentioned, he's like, everyone sees Scal as like a stretch four in the NBA, and they're trying to use him in like the Nerlens role, and that's just not his game. So that's part of it. And like you said, this is a guard dominated Kentucky team as opposed to last year, you know, with Cauley Stein and Towns, and even looking at like Lee and Dakari Johnson off the bench. I mean, that was a big man team. And, you know, the change in style, I guess, hasn't really translated for him. And it's worked for some guys. I mean, it's making Jamal Murray, you know, for the most part, a guy we'll talk about in a little bit, looking like a great prospect, but it's not exactly fitting Scal's game. So I guess before we move on, like, what is your overall take? Do you think what that anonymous scout said was over the line?
I just think that he's an idiot. I mean, I think over the line, I don't think it's over the line. I just think that, like, whoever that scout is should probably not have a job in scouting. You know, I think,
anonymous scout, aka Sacramento Kings.
Like he, you know, that you can find a scout. There's so many scouts, and they're all so chatty. Like, you could find a scout to rip pretty much any prospect you want. Like,
that's another point Parrish made too. Is like, you could find someone that will tell you Stephen Curry's overrated,
right?
If you want it,
or
you
like
want to report
you
it.
Could like think of all the articles that were coming out about like Wiggins, like early on, like in his tenure at Kansas, where like everyone is kind of questioning, you know, his drive and all that stuff and his assertiveness. I mean, people were writing columns like left and right about how Wiggins just doesn't have what it takes to be like a star. You kind of have to, it's never the extreme. It's always something closer to the middle. Right. So, I think a lot of what he said is fair about how Scal is clearly not the player that he was advertised to be coming into the year, but I think it's crazy to say that he's played his way out of the lottery yet.
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. And another Kentucky guy I wanted to talk about is Tyler Ulis. I think we've hit on him in a couple previous podcasts, but nothing too in-depth. And this is a guy that when you watch, you don't see many college point guards like him, the way he's able to control a game, kind of a Chris Paul type of figure, I think, for this Kentucky team. But at the same time, he's 5'9", he's skinny, he isn't a great shooter. Is he more, looking at him as an NBA prospect, does he project to be more than a decent backup in the NBA?
No. I mean, I think he's...
I feel like the guy you look to for him is like, could he be like a DJ Augustine?
Who's
been like a spot starter.
It's not a bad comparison. I mean, there's always going to be room for a guy like Ulis on an NBA bench. I mean, you know, look at some of the... I mean, he's a better pro prospect than like TJ McConnell, obviously.
Right.
I mean, that's an extreme example.
Future Sixer,
the Sixers. But I mean, like, there's a ton of, you know, crappy point guards that get run just based on the situations they're in. So, I mean, Ulis is at least a guy that you're comfortable running the offense and getting the ball to your playmakers when you're starting point guards on the bench. I think he's a second rounder, though.
Yeah, I think he's certainly a second round prospect. I mean, somebody I'd like to see at least make an impact in the NBA. I mean, he's about as fun as it gets to watch, but even looking at DJ Augustine, I mean, DJ Augustine's got 2 inches on him, and that's gonna ward teams off, and I think he's going to have to become a better three-point shooter. I mean, he could kind of stick around as an Aaron Brooks type of guy, but I don't know if he's quite the shot creator.
Yeah, like the thing about guys like, you know, Brooks and Nate Robinson and Isaiah Thomas, like they can all go on stretches where they're just lighting it up from outside. And, yeah, Ulis is more of a just true point guard type, and I don't know how well that plays at that size. Mm-hmm.
What about Jamal Murray then, too? I mean, this is a guy who a couple weeks ago was rising as high as, you know, number three, number four in some mock drafts. A little bit down now. He's been sporadic. I mean, he's a guy who certainly isn't shy about taking any shots, but he seems to have limitations. Like, I mean, he's a very, very good college player and a very good prospect, but at the same time, does he have that, you know, future NBA star look to him? No. I don't see it.
I just think he's the type of guy that, like, casual... Like, guys that love to watch college basketball and are kind of, like, casual, like, NBA fans will, like, watch him and be like, oh, man, he's going to be great in the NBA. I don't really see it. Like, he's kind of a chucker.
He reminds me of Deion Waiters.
I was just going to say that. That's a quality comp on him. I've seen him be able to like set his teammates up when he wants to, but he doesn't want to very often. And you know, he's shown a decent stroke from three, but overall, like, I mean, he's taken a lot of long twos. His best skill, I think, is just the ability to drive to the rack and, you know, create something. I mean, he's really good at getting to the rim. So, you know, maybe he has a role as, like, your sixth man that just comes off the bench and you know, scores a bunch of points in a limited amount of time. I think if he's your starting shooting guard, that's not great. I wonder, I'm sure there are some teams that are looking at him as a point guard prospect with the thought of maybe him being kind of like a Tyreke Evans type of point guard. But, I think he's going to go in the top 10 in this draft, but I think that says more about the prospects that are, you know, after Simmons and Ingram. I mean, I think that you could order those guys in kind of any direction depending on what you are looking for.
He does have good length. He has a good, you know, strength profile at this age. You know, there are a lot of things to like, high intelligence, but like you said, some of the shot selection has been really bad of late. Against Louisville, he had a couple just head-scratching type of one-on-one, very Waiters-esque plays, really, for lack of a better term. And I think I like him, I guess, a little bit better as a point guard, just because you don't need – I mean, at a shooting guard in the NBA right now, you want that athleticism, and he just doesn't have it. He's kind of a crafty athlete, I guess. You know, you get around the rim, he uses his body well, he uses his length, got 6'8 wingspan to kind of get the ball up to the rim, but he's not a great athlete. I don't know if he profiles that well as a defender. Not a bad defender, but certainly not going to be a major plus in that area.
I mean, he could be, you know, maybe like his best case would be kind of like a Victor Oladipo type of thing.
I think like a CJ McCollum a little bit, maybe a guy who can kind of play both spots but isn't going to be a great passer by any means.
Definitely not a guy, though. You shouldn't look at him and be like, oh, he's going to be a star, because he's not going to be.
No, I don't think so. I think he could be a good player, but I don't think he's a franchise type of guy by any means. The last guy I want to talk about as we stick with prospects is Grayson Allen. 33 yesterday against Long Beach State. Obviously not the greatest competition, but you know, 33 points is 33 points. I mean, where do you stand on him? I think the consensus right now is at best late lottery, most likely, you know, mid to late first round.
I definitely think he should go in the first round. I think that he actually has fewer flaws than Jamal Murray. So, like, I view those two guys kind of similarly at the next level, similar athletes. I think
Grayson Allen's a better athlete.
Yeah. I mean, you could definitely make that case. I think that he's, it's going to be hilarious to just watch all the people compare him to, like, Gordon Hayward and all the, you know, white shooting guards that have come before him. But, you know, I think he's a legitimate. There might be some J.J. Redick comps.
Yeah, he's not J.J. Redick by any means.
But there's, you know, I think he's a starting two guard, like not a top 10 two guard, but like a 15 to 25 starting two guard, I think is fairly realistic. And I think that he's a guy that I think a lot of teams will look at later. A lot of the smart teams will look at later in that first round and really be kind of eyeing up.
Is there anybody that you like that comes to mind as a comparison for him? It is hard, you know, the whole white player comparison. You want to, you know, most people seem to default to that.
I mean, I think there might be a little, like, Wes Matthews there, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I was going to say, like, a little Eric Bledsoe in the way that he plays. Just kind of a sneaky athlete. And he's bigger than Bledsoe. I mean, Bledsoe profiles, what, 6'2", 6'3", and Grayson Allen's at 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
I mean, he doesn't have that many. Like, what would you say his biggest flaw is? Like, I don't really think he has.
You
could
say decision making at this point, but the way this Duke team is constructed, it's a weird kind of mid. You know, they're kind of in like a middle year where, you know, mm-hmm. obviously they won it all last year. They had a lot of attrition, and
I still think they could win it all this year.
Oh yeah,
like they've got some issues.
Two of the top 20 players in the country, and Ingram and Allen.
Yeah, for sure. And Emile Jefferson's probably a top 40
guy. I mean, he's out right now. Yeah. And I mean, Marshall Plumlee looked great. If whatever you want to put into that, I don't know what his draft situation is. Isn't he going to the military or something?
Who knows?
I think he is, but he had a couple plays yesterday that were head turners. But yeah, I mean, I think this Duke team can run with just about anyone. We'll move on to NBA talk. First, a quick word from DraftKings. Fantasy football may be winding down, but DraftKings.com is not messing around. DraftKings.com is America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where you can win enormous cash prizes every week. You already researched the players for your season-long fantasy team. Now turn that knowledge into instant cash at DraftKings.com. Head over to DraftKings.com now. Enter that promo code ROTOHOOPS for free entry with your first deposit. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter ROTOWIRE, free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. You'll actually be playing quite a bit of fantasy college football this weekend on DraftKings.com, if I understand correct.
Lots of action on DraftKings.com right now.
Yeah, I came into the office and your screen was just covered in lineups.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's probably the last, this New Year's Eve, New Year's Day slate, the last hurrah for the college football DFS season. So, you know, by the time you're listening to this, it's going to be too late for you to get involved with that. But Really, I mean, it's definitely
missed out big.
It's become my favorite DFS sport to play, and it's not even really all that close. And that's coming from a guy whose two favorite sports are baseball and basketball, and that's not even close. So like, it's just a very kind of unique once a week type of thing that you get to do. The thing I hate daily NFL because there's really no angles, you know, like everybody knows all the angles. Like everyone knows this guy's underpriced, that guy's underpriced. Like college football, like so many names. I mean, it's hard to keep everyone straight. So like you can have a play that not many people will have and it can pay off. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunity in that field if you're looking to kind of break in next year.
Yeah. Shout out Paxton Lynch.
Oh, come on.
Sorry, that was a low blow. So, yeah, looking at a couple of last night's games, the Warriors fell to 29-2. Time to panic for them. Blowout loss at Dallas, 114-91. No Steph Curry for the Warriors. Self-proclaimed best shooting guard in the league, Klay Thompson, just 10 points in 34 minutes. I mean, Curry's not going to miss more than maybe a game or two on top of this one going forward, but Does this one loss still jeopardize the 72 win season for you? And what like where do they need to be at the All-Star break for that to still be realistic?
They need to have probably fewer than like 7 losses or fewer than 8 losses.
That shouldn't be hard, right? I mean, that's basically a month and a half.
I mean, they're not. You could ask me this question. I mean, they're just not. They're going to make a run at that.
Barring a significant injury to Curry, and I think they could even weather one to Klay, you know, for a while, as long as he's not out 6 weeks. You know, if Klay misses 2 weeks, I think they could still run the table over that span. Curry's the one guy, and probably Draymond, that they can't go without.
Their issue, you know, obviously Curry and Draymond can't miss more than like a week, I would say, for them to have a hope at catching that 72 wins, but they also can't have injuries pile up to like their supporting guys. Like, so I mean, like, they Azili's out, Barnes out, Barbosa's out. I mean, that just really stretches them a little thin in their rotation. So you can afford to be without like Barnes for a month, or even like you said, like I don't think it would be the end of the world if they were without Klay Thompson for a few weeks, or even Andre Iguodala for a few weeks. But you don't want to be missing both of those guys, like two guys at the same time, because then it just really stretches you thin where Brandon Rush is playing a ton of minutes and you don't really want that.
Yeah, like you said, Barbosa, probably the big one that they really can't be without on that bench.
Well, like, he's a rotational guy. You know?
No, he is. Mean,
like,
he is.
Like, they need – there's a set, like, 8 or 9 guys that belong in that rotation. And then once you have to start pulling guys in that aren't – one of those 8 or 9 guys, and that's when you start to get exposed a little
bit. Well, and part of the reason they've been so good, I mean, Curry and Green and Thompson get most of the credit, but like you said, they go 9 or 10 deep with guys that just keep coming at you, and it's very Spurs-like in that you don't get a break. You know, you can't say, oh, their second unit's in, now we can make a run. You know, the second unit comes in and obviously doesn't play as well as the first unit, but there's not a huge drop-off where you feel like they're vulnerable at any point. Looking at a couple more games from last night, the Clippers beat the Hornets, Magic over the Nets, the Lakers win in Boston. That's a terrible loss for the Celtics. Bulls beat the Pacers, Raptors beat the Wizards, T-Wolves knock off the Jazz, Spurs dominate the Suns, Will Barton and the Nuggets fall to the Trailblazers, and the 76ers pick up win number 3 on the road at a hostile Sleep Train Arena. We won't really get into box scores or anything like that from last night. We want to talk about some of the teams, like we mentioned at the top, that are kind of in between, contending for playoff spots, probably not titles, you know, some of the teams we're going to talk about, but basically whether or not these teams should make a move to try to improve, whether or not they can improve without making a move, or...
Basically kind of what we did 2 weeks ago, right? And I just want to say, like, we both said last week that like the Hawks were a team like to not kind of write off. I think they were sitting in what, like the 8th seed.
They were like 9 or 10 because of all the ties and all that.
And now they're at number two. So like, you know, we know what we're talking about here. Like you can you can take our word as gospel and what's about to come.
As always. So Memphis, they're the first team I want to talk about. They sit in the sixth seed right now, which is, I believe, where they were or where they've pretty much been for the, for the whole season. They got off to a terrible start, picked things up a little bit, but I don't think any of the, you know, the rumors of is this the end of grit and grind? Is Dave Yeager on the hot seat? Like, those haven't really subsided a whole lot. And you know, I don't really know what the Grizzlies expected this year. I think probably a little bit better than 18 and 16. But when you look at the rest of the Western Conference, I think this is probably right where they should have been, right? Maybe not the record they wanted, but fifth, sixth, seventh in the West. Like, that seems about right.
Definitely. I don't think that they were ever really in the discussion as a top four team. Or even a top five team. I mean, they're ahead of the Rockets, but I mean, everyone would have had the Rockets ahead of them before the season. So for them to be sixth, I mean, that's just kind of status quo. I think everyone kind of wants to say, like, you gotta, you know, you gotta make a trade or something. Like, they're just not built to play with teams like Golden State or whatever. Like, that you can't. There's no move that meant to make them, like, in that Warriors Spurs class, really. So your only play, I think, if you're them, is to just kind of play things out, you know, try to get healthy, try to get you know, your system, try to get everyone to gel together and work as a cohesive unit. And you know, if you can be playing your best basketball come the playoffs, and you know, God forbid Steph Curry gets hurt or Kawhi Leonard gets hurt, then you just try to parlay, you know, your opportunities. I mean, Golden State was a great team last year, but they took advantage of some favorable opportunities based on
their
situations.
They're lucky.
So I mean, like, you have to get lucky, but you don't win a title without getting a little lucky. But the Grizzlies, like, they can't, they can't blow it up, I don't think, and they can't make a move that puts them in that class. So I think you just got to kind of play it out.
I feel the same way too. It's you're playing for basically maybe we can make a run,
like,
to the West
let's
Finals.
See,
you
if
know?
We can win a playoff series, and then, you know, who knows what happens.
Exactly, and I don't know what the right move is. I don't know if there is a right answer for Memphis right now, and I think that speaks to how good Golden State, San Antonio, and Oklahoma City are. Like, I think you hit it perfectly. You can't. What could they possibly do unless you can make some kind of crazy move and, you know, basically fleece a couple teams to, like, acquire superstars? There's nothing you can do. There's nothing realistically that you can
do
to jump into that category.
Yeah, nobody wants, like, anybody on your team other than Connelly and Marc Gasol.
Yeah, and, like, you know, the trade Zach Randolph stuff. It's like, what are you going to get back?
Yeah, like, oh, let's trade Zach Randolph. Like, that's, yeah, I mean, I can only imagine what that haul would look like, and it wouldn't be that pretty.
Yeah, I don't know what the solution is. I mean, do you think? I mean, at some point they're going to have to move on from this core,
yeah,
right? I mean, and I guess the question at this point,
they're in a tough spot because they've done a pretty poor job of compiling assets.
Drafting has been horrendous.
Like, and like even when they've had they had John Luer for a while, and they just never moved on from that. I mean,
there's something to be said. Brandon Wright was a huge, really good addition for them, and he's been out. Mm-hmm. And is Brandon Wright going to be the difference between 18 and 16 and, like, I don't know, like 25 and 9? Like, no, probably not at all. And you look at the rest of the roster on this team, and Marc Gasol, he's turned 30 this past year. Mike Conley, he's up for an extension. He's kind of in the Brandon Knight territory right now, where I don't think, you know, they haven't tipped their hand whether they want to commit to him or not. Courtney Lee is 30 years old. You got Vince Carter. You got Zach Randolph. I mean, there's no young assets. Like, who's the best under 30 asset on this team right now, other than Conley, who isn't even under contract next year? Like, Jamichael Green?
No. I don't know. This team reminds me a lot of those Bucks teams, like the Glenn Robinson, Ray Allen, Sam Cassell Bucks teams, where, like, it was a nice run. You know, they got to, like, the conference finals one year. Like, it was a really, you know, good time in franchise history. It's inevitably going to come to an end, and it's going to get pretty ugly when it does, because they're not going to be able to lure free agents.
Right.
It's going to take them a few years to start picking high in the draft. There's just going to be some really, really lean years coming. And, you know, you can't – not every team gets to win a title. Like, it was a successful run. It was a memorable run. Like, everyone's going to remember these Grizzlies teams. And, you know, no shame in not winning a title with this group, I don't think.
No, not at all. No, I mean, this is certainly the golden era of Grizzlies basketball, a franchise. And I know that sounds odd to say, but I mean, it's not a very old franchise. I mean, mm-hmm. This is a team that's only been in Memphis for, what, 15 years? And, I mean, you've had a winning record. I'm trying to look back every year since 2010. And even then, you know, you were a competitive team, a playoff mm-hmm. team in 2009, 2010. And it's not a, like you said, it's not an attractive free agent market. The thing about this is, like, it's been such a memorable time for this franchise that it makes it a little bit harder to let go, I think. You know, I mean, it's literally been mm-hmm. defined as grit and grind. Like, they have a name for this team and this group of guys, and I think that makes it a little bit harder to kind of, you know, you can't just have a fire sale and get rid of basically the you know, the core guys, Tony Allen, Marc Gasol, Conley, and Randolph, who've been there for these last 4 or 5 years and obviously been embraced by the city quite a bit. It just makes it a little bit, you know, there's more emotion, I guess, attached to moving on from it. And I think we're kind of seeing that right now, where if you're management, I think you probably want to move on sooner than later. But if you start selling off those guys this year, your attendance is going to plummet. And with it, you know, you kind of start embracing those 3 or 4 years of mediocrity. And that's assuming that you draft well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we've kind of hit on all there is to say about the Grizzlies. Yeah. They're going to probably make the playoffs and probably be an underdog in the first round.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where Mike Conley ends up. If he's not back in Memphis, what team is going to throw an offer at him, because it's going to happen. Houston, they're sitting at 16-17. Quality wins. They beat OKC. They beat the Clippers twice. One of those with no Chris Paul. That was a couple months ago, or about a month ago. They beat Dallas, which I think is a quality win at this point. And then they had that big win over the Spurs on Christmas. Of course, they followed that up with a loss to the Pelicans and a loss to the Hawks. So I think when we're talking about the Rockets, it's fair to say, can they turn it around? And when we say turn it around, can they be a title contender? Memphis, I don't think we can say that about, but I think with the personnel,
I think the list of title contenders, without being just way too liberal with that phrase, is limited to 4 teams this year. But I think that they could become a, like, dark horsey kind of team you don't want to have to play in the first round of the playoffs type of team. Like, they're, you know, they're in a better spot than, like, the Grizzlies in terms of making a legitimate push to win a couple playoff series if they can get everything right. Because we saw when they were functioning at a really high level down the stretch last year that they could give, you know, any team in the league really a ton of trouble. That series against the Warriors was closer, I think, than people remember, at least early on in that series. I think the Clint Capella, Dwight Howard, Donatas Mata-Yunas, Terrence Jones front court is maybe the best in the league. And I think that could give a lot of teams a lot of trouble. I wonder if they have the right coach to kind of make all the pieces work. I think that, you know, going from McHale to Bickerstaff was somewhat uninspired, I guess. I mean, I know that the players like him and everything, but, you know, this is a team that kind of needs someone, I think, that has kind of done it before. And, you know, having Billy Donovan in OKC, like, Billy Donovan's kind of been exposed a little bit, but you still have Westbrook and Durant. Like, there's not a ton of coaching. Like, Scott Brooks basically wasn't coaching anything.
Unless Byron Scott was coaching the finals, Thunder, they would be fine.
Right. Like, I mean, the floor for them with a crappy coach is still like a top 3 or 4
right.
team, as long as everyone's healthy. The floor for the Rockets is much lower than that. I mean, they need a lot of
it seems like
scheming.
they need like right. the coaxing and the
right.
the motivation of a coach, whereas yeah. OKC is just, I mean, and they're so much deeper and so
I mean,
more proven.
James Harden is kind of, he's got such a warped view of like react, like he loves to just kind of say like he's the best player in the league and all that stuff, but like you got a coach fired like 3 weeks into the season, like you're like, you know, I mean, who does that? Like, I mean, you showed up out of shape, like you were a couple games away from going to the finals and you come in like completely uninspired, like playing terrible basketball. Like, I mean, there a lot of that's riding on you, man. So like, there, I mean, you need someone to come in there and kind of get you know, that work ethic and that ego in line. But I think they have the pieces to be kind of a tough out in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to be a title contender, but they're going to push one of those teams, you know, five or six, seven games maybe if everything goes right.
Do you think they need to make any kind of major move to get back into the, you know, the borderline title race or at least race?
They'll try to do something. I just don't know.
Should they move Dwight?
I would have no problem with them moving Dwight if they – I mean, I don't know who wants Dwight. Like,
I think people want Dwight. I don't know what like, they're willing to give up for
like,
Dwight.
What are you getting for Dwight? Like, you need
– What about that hypothetical Dwight for Horford swap that was being thrown around?
I mean, I think I like that for Houston, but – I don't know why Atlanta would do that. I guess it's just, I mean, there's a lot of hypothetical, like, oh, what about this for Dwight? Like, because everyone wants to move Dwight. But, like, right. Then you have to look at the trade and be like, well, why would this side of the deal do that? And why would this side of the deal do that? I don't think there's anything that's
the major defense there is he's from Atlanta.
He's from Atlanta. Like, he's not happy. Like, yeah, let's do it. Like, I mean, Atlanta
some guys
is,
don't like to play in their home city. Well, that's the thing, you know. Like,
Dwight Howard doesn't want to play in any city.
No,
like let's get real. I don't know what trade's going to be available to them. I think they're going to try to do something. I think it would make sense to move Jones or Mo Yunus just because. I mean, you want to improve your best five man unit, and right now. You know, you could probably make a case that four of their six best players play either power forward or center, so you can't get those guys all on the court at the same time. So if you can't if you can't get like a nice return for Howard, you might be able to get a nicer return for you know, Jones or Mota Yunus. Maybe pair them with like Harrell and or Decker or something like that in a deal with a kind of a
see that's where you can
thing.
That's where you can add like a piece, but not, you know, a third or fourth type of option piece. I don't know who that would be off the top of my head, but I think that's a more plausible move. I think Dwight's still a really good player, and you're probably not going to return the value on him because of the injuries, because of the kind of it's hard to say off the court stuff with him, but you know, just kind of general work ethic, just demeanor, coach issues, things like that are starting to weigh against him at this point in his career as his age is getting up there. I just think it's going to be hard to get that kind of impact back, and they don't want to trade him for like a young guy either. You know, I mean, they're in a position to contend now.
Mm-hmm.
A couple weeks ago, Simmons on one of his podcasts raised the question of should they trade James Harden, and it was just a quick hypothetical. But I'm a firm 100% no on that. Do you agree?
Oh yeah,
that's another one too. It's like, what could you possibly get back?
No, yeah, I mean, Harden's one of those guys. Like, he's got his warts, but he can win playoff series by himself. I mean, I think he's one of the few guys that can do that. I don't think there's a way to get.
Is there like a? You'd almost have to get back. You'd have to go like, all right, Harden straight up for like Paul George or something. You know, like what kind of package could you even build that would be worth it for him? I don't think there is one. And I think the Rockets are committed to him. I don't think there's any issues there. I think the fact that they were willing to fire their tenured coach.
Right.
For him, essentially, speaks to that. But this is a team, I mean, opponents are shooting 46% against Houston. They're terrible defending the paint. They're a terrible rebounding team, which makes no sense considering that personnel. Eighth in defensive rating last season, which is impressive considering the way that they played, and now down to 24th this year. So that's been the issue. I mean, the offense hasn't been as good. Harden hasn't been as good, but they're still scoring a decent amount. They're just not stopping anybody. The last team we'll talk about, New Orleans. They're sitting at 10-21. Obviously, we know about their start, and I think the general feeling was that once they got healthy, they could go on a run, they could go on some surge and get right back into this, but that hasn't happened at all. I mean, this is a team that has a few quality wins. Dallas, they beat San Antonio, they beat Phoenix twice, which at the time looked like a decent win, now not anymore, and they did beat Cleveland, and then that recent win over Houston, which I think was Saturday, but even then, is that a question or is that a quality win? Who knows? So they're still sitting now second last in the West, 10-21. That said, that only puts you back 3.5 of the 8 seed, and the Utah Jazz currently hold that, and then they're not a team that's inspiring a ton of trust right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Pelicans, I think, would be they'd still be crazy to make a push for the playoffs at this point. Like, you know, at best you're going to get the 7 seed. Probably not even that. I mean, you're probably hoping for the 8 seed, which is basically a invitation to get waxed by the Warriors again in the first round. So, I Anthony Davis. If I owned Anthony Davis in a season long league, I'd be trying to shop him like crazy, because to me this is like a perfect find some sort of an injury to keep him sidelined for a few months type of situation, where they have the 4th worst record in the league right now. So, you know, only and they're 1 win better than the Nets for the 3rd worst. So, I mean, if you can go into the lottery with, you know, the 3rd best chance at getting the number 1 pick, you know, second best chance at getting the number 2 pick, if that's the way it plays out, you know, pairing Davis with a guy like Ingram or Ben Simmons, I mean, that just completely changes the outlook of your franchise long term, and gives you a better chance, I think, to keep Davis long term than if you just continue to show up in the playoffs and get bounced in the first round every year. So, I mean, I think that they got to find a way to get a little tanky here. I mean, I think that there's.
You think Tom Benson's gonna go like full Tonya Harding and
Tom Benson's
Anthony?
A weirdo.
He's a weird dude.
I don't think he has any clue what's going on, to be honest. But, you know, Gentry's the type of guy that, I mean, he know like the. I mean, a lot of people forget, like, the Warriors tanked their asses off that 1 year to get Harrison Barnes. Like, yep. I mean,
franchise savior.
There's tons of examples, like the Spurs with David Robinson, getting Tim Duncan. I mean, like, a lot of, you know, untouchable teams and franchises are built on moves like the one that I'm suggesting the Pelicans make and try to go for one of those top 2 picks. So, yeah, I mean, it would be kind of a shame to waste an Anthony Davis season doing that, but, you know, this is the situation they find themselves in. They're 10-21. You know, you got to look at what the best option is. I mean, if they were in line for like a 5 seed, I'd say go for it. But, you know, it looks like 8 seed or lottery. You might as well go low in the lottery at that point.
Right. And Davis, I think, has been a disappointment despite, I mean, the numbers have been good. The raw numbers have been good. But I don't think he's quite ready. You know, some of those like old, you know, those Cleveland, you know, first era LeBron and Cleveland teams, you kind of felt like, just get in there and we'll see, you know, maybe LeBron can carry us. And he kind of did, you know, several times. Davis, I don't think you get that feel quite yet. You know, he's not quite enough of a one man team at this point that you feel like he could really get you over any playoff series by himself, especially against San Antonio or Golden State. I mean, totally out of the question. What New Orleans does have going for them is the assets, though. I mean, you have expirings in Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson that teams want. Tyreek Evans, not an expiring, but only 1 year left on his deal after this, which, you know, in light of the collective bargaining, you know, future outlook, that deal really isn't as bad as it maybe looked a year or two ago. So they have pieces they can move. And they're, you know, if we're talking about them compared to, like, Memphis, who we just spoke about. They're in a considerably better spot. Even though they're a worse team right now, record-wise, and they've played much worse, they have the best player out of those two teams, and they have the assets to move, whereas Memphis just kind of has ancillary pieces that are only going to return other ancillary pieces.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tough thing about the. I mean, we talked about Memphis probably more than anybody once, but they, you know, they're in a really tough spot. They don't have moves that they can make, really. So
they're like where Dallas was last year, where, I mean, Dallas got their title, so it was a success, their run with Dirk. And going into the last offseason, you know, we were thinking, like, this is going to be bad. Like, once Dirk leaves, they're going to completely bottom out for a couple of years. But then, you know, they get Chandler Parsons 2 years ago. They get Wes Matthews. They almost get DeAndre Jordan. And just like that, this team is kind of, you know, they're not a contender right now, but they have pieces in place to add one or two guys, and they're always a player in free agency. And, yeah, I think Memphis is not quite trending in that direction. I guess we'll see what happens. But, you know, Marc Gasol alone is not necessarily enough to be a perennial playoff team in the West.
No.
All right, so, yeah, looking at Thursday's games, like we said, it's going to be a college football-dominated night. Bucks-Pacers, Timberwolves-Pistons, Warriors-Rockets will be fun. Houston's actually favored in that game. I'm assuming, I think Curry's questionable as of now, but I guess the odds makers don't think he'll be playing. Clippers, Pels. Pelicans are favored in that one as well, which is a bit odd. I guess no Blake Griffin for the Clippers. Suns, Thunder, that's a 15-point spread, obviously in favor of OKC. And then Trailblazers, Jazz. So are you going to have an eye on any of these, or is it going to be straight alcohol and football?
Alcohol and football in that order.
It's the big two. I'm with you there. I mean, it's New Year's Eve. I don't think we have to be bashful about that. No. I'm going to probably snatch up a rack of hams on my way home, and we'll be
surprised
good to
you
go.
Don't already have that chilling in the fridge.
No, well, you see,
it's chilling in the liquor store's fridge. They're keeping it cold for
right. Yeah, yeah, it's kind of like a. I don't know if I told you last time I went to this liquor store. The fine, I don't even know what it's called. It's on it's on Broom Street in Madison, and I walked in there, couldn't find hams.
Oh, it's like kind of in a bottom of like an apartment building or something like that.
More or less, yeah. It's on the corner of Broom and like Maine. I think it would be.
I've been
Echo Tap area. Yeah, it's close to your house. Yeah. So yeah, I walked in there. It's run by what appear to be people like our age.
At the register is a little too chatty for my liking.
Yeah. Well, story one. Last time I went in there, she was in a deep conversation with somebody about when I walked up, all I heard was Donald Trump is the next Hitler.
Oh boy,
here we go. So I put the headphones in and got that transaction over. But previous time I went there and they didn't have hams, like at least visible. And, you know, me being the hilarious guy that I am, I walked up to the counter. I was like, can you show me like the special vault where you guys keep the hams? And she just gave me this look. It was like, we don't have hams. It's not 1985. It's like, whoa. Yeah, so,
easy.
Yeah, so I called the cops and we got it sorted out. But I'm going to have to go to a different liquor store, I guess. But I don't know. I feel like New Year's Eve, I should class it up a little bit. I actually drank Point Special Lager last night, which I don't think that might be classing it down from hams. I guess you're in a beer club. What's the take on Point Special Lager?
I'm not gonna be drinking that anytime soon. So,
are you going straight champagne tonight, or is it still cool to do beer on New Year's?
Going out to eat, I think we'll probably have some maybe some martinis or something. Going to a seafood place, so probably started out. How dare you?
Where are you actually going?
Tempest. Oyster Bar. Just up the road from you.
That doesn't sound like somewhere I would go.
A two-second walk from your house.
I'll see you there.
But I'm bringing over a couple growlers from Carbon 4 to this party I'm going to, and also bringing over some tequila. So that'll probably get me covered from about 9:30 to 11:45. Then it's champagne
9:45.
Time, and then it's at 12:05 we'll get back into the beer and the tequila.
Nice. Yeah, well, that's the thing. You want to pace yourself on a New Year's type of day. Like if you're going to start, especially with these college football games, if you don't have to work today, it's going to be hard not to drink, I would think, for that 3 o'clock start.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think. The majority of the people in Madison will start around 3.
I think so, too, especially after last night. But we didn't even talk about Badger football. But
Madison, the rare town where you could do drunk driving traps around like 6:30 at night and be pretty productive.
Yeah, nobody's going to be driving, especially with the snow. It's still on the road, too. The Buick did not handle the snow. Shockingly, very well this last couple of days. But that'll do it for us on this New Year's Eve. Everyone have a great New Year's Eve, a great start to 2016. Again, we are sponsored by DraftKings.com. And again, that promo code is ROTOHOOPS. If you enter that, making your first deposit on DraftKings, you'll get a free contest entry today.
Ace is a place with the helpful hardware, folks.
At Ace, your backyard's right in our backyard, which means we have hand-picked products that are right for the birds in your neighborhood, like premium bird seed, suet, birdhouses, and feeders. Stop by your local Ace and get everything you need to attract the birds you want, including Ace Wild Bird Food, on sale now. Now through Tuesday only, when you buy 2 20-pound bags of wild bird food, get a third bag free. Only at Ace, the helpful place. Offer valid through February 28th at participating stores.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.